It's not even necessarily that you buy a bad one in this ecosystem. It's that you buy one that has bad competitors that screw with it, right?
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Mark, I have a lot of people that come to me and talk to me as their buyers, and they say, Joe, what's the risk of buying an Amazon business? And I talk, 5-6 years ago, everyone thought the risk was really high. But today, there are people that are a lot smarter than you and me, and you and me combined, and maybe all of our team, that have raised $10, $20, $30 million to buy up Amazon businesses and build a portfolio. And I understand you had Carlos from Thras on the podcast talking about just that.
Thras.io. He's very careful to actually correct me on that at the beginning of the podcast. And he tells me the meaning behind their name, which is really cool. I'm going to save it for the podcast so people can listen to that. But yeah, what I wanted to know, right? So many buyers look at Amazon only businesses and they discount them for channel risk because they're like, well, do you really want to be on this one platform? Or competition and products, products can be sort of ubiquitous. Competition can be really tough. And you're subject and mercy to the whims of Amazon. And so, here we have Carlos putting together a fund and buying up a lot of these Amazon ASINs. And the question is, you're a smart guy. You've done a lot of business in the past. And we talked about how he had grown multiple businesses and sold them. So why is he going all in on this platform? And also, why are people giving him money to go all in on this platform? What's the reasoning here to say this is where the future of e-commerce is? And so we talk a lot of statistics on this, and we talk a lot about what is the future of Amazon. And here's a spoiler alert, right? Amazon's going all in on FBA. It's one of their three biggest platforms. It's one of the three legs to their stool that they have, right? With their AWS being one, and their third-party services being one of the largest profit centers that they have. In addition, when you take a look at where do they stand in the marketplace, it's staggering. Everybody knows that they're huge, but they're 49% of online e-commerce sales, right? When you look at this in terms of total retail sales, total retail sales make up about, roughly 10% of all, e-commerce makes up about 10% of all retail sales. Amazon makes up about half of that. So What do we do here? We're looking at this, we're saying, okay, online sales is only 10%, which means it's going to grow. Amazon is already half of that online marketplace. What's the future here? Well, the future is Amazon is trying to become the e-commerce internet, right? They're trying to become the de facto way of ordering products online, and everybody else is playing catch up right now. And so they're betting and saying, we get it. We know that Amazon growth is going to continue. We know it's going to continue at a rapid pace for a long time. There's lots of room to grow. And yeah, there are competitors. And we talk about this. We talk about Shopify just announced recently that they're investing $1 billion in a Shopify fulfillment network, which is great news. And he was ecstatic to hear that. He's like, competition like this is good. But the fact is Shopify is playing catch up. Target is playing catch up. Walmart is playing catch up. And they're not there yet at all. They're more difficult to work with than Amazon. They don't have the same draw. And so it made me rethink this, right? If we're looking at where do you want to put your money as a business owner?
That's it right there. The multiples are going up on Amazon businesses tomorrow, guys. That's it.
That's it. Right? It's more sure of an investment than maybe we've thought about in the past. So, it was, we talked to some of these guys that are doing this professionally that are on the Amazon space only. Fascinating conversation. I enjoyed it thoroughly to talk to somebody who's doing this and sees things from maybe a different angle than what most buyers think about.
Well, I think it's great because, probably half the audience here is made up of buyers as well. And they ask that question all the time. Should I buy an Amazon business? And we know that, I say we're going to raise the multiple on Amazon businesses. We actually don't, as we always say, determine the multiple. The buyers do. because we do our best based upon historic numbers, and then we get the feedback from the buyers. If we're wrong, they let us know by driving the multiple down or driving it up in some cases. Year to date, you know, this is, you know, end of June that we're recording this. Year to date, I've seen the multiples on Amazon businesses at levels that I'd never seen in the past. So I think that the buyer pool is getting much more confidence in the Amazon channel. I think that that one channel risk is, you know, if you're focused on adding new ASINs and growing the business worldwide on other Amazon platforms in countries, the risk is diminished a little bit. Historically, we've seen multi-channel businesses sell for 10 to 20% more than single channel Amazon businesses. But I do think that's creeping up a little bit and catching up a little bit. So that it'll be really interesting to hear what Carlos has to say. He's a super nice guy. One quick aside, I had an Amazon business that I had for sale, and Carlos had to call with him. The guy loved him, and they both happened to be traveling to Singapore at separate times. They actually got together and had coffee and dinner with their families just because they had met on a phone call. So Carlos is a super nice guy, very, very good at what he does, and obviously an expert on the Amazon side. So looking forward to listening to this one myself.
Oh, that was all the good stuff.
That was all the good stuff. You see, that's the thing. We always record the good stuff before I hit record, and I'm actually going to intro with that. Carlos, thank you for coming on the show.
Cool. I'm glad to be here, man.
Yeah. So tell us who you are. I know who you are, but tell everybody else who you are.
I mean, everybody can look on LinkedIn. They usually do. Can look there. But I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've started. It depends on how you count them, size, whatever. But over a dozen companies. Companies. I was thinking about this on the way. Because people are like, wow. Well, tell us about that. I've started. I think it's about 6 to 8. I got to figure out that are multi-million dollar companies, right? So I've taken companies public. I've sold them. I bought them. I've sold several for, nine figures. Dealt with some amazing people along the way. And it's always been, tech related. So software, advertising, some services related to that stuff, and e-commerce stuff. So I've got a lot of miles on the road, put it that way.
Yeah, no, it sounds like the profile for any of our brokers. So, if this whole Thrash.io thing doesn't work out for you, let me know. so you're the CEO of Thrash.io, and,
I know we have the worst name in the world, but let me just make it clear for everybody. It's Thrash.io.
Thrash.io, I'm sorry. It's good that I know this now, because I've been saying Thrash.io. So Thrash.io, okay.
And it's based on if you look at our site, it's based on the Greek word thrasos, which means boldness or confidence. But it was actually an Amazon warrior queen, hence the kind of Amazon connection.
That's pretty cool. You see, I learned something. This is awesome. I love this. I love the name now.
Josh came up with the name in just a second, and I'm co-CEO and co-founder with my partner, Josh Silverstein. He just came up with it, and I don't like to spend too much time naming companies, even though I've done that professionally before, so we just went with it.
So it was an Amazon goddess? Is that what you said?
She was an Amazon queen, a warrior queen. So we actually have a whole lot of sub companies named for Amazon warrior queens. Things that do different parts of what we do in the ecosystem. It's kind of fun. You just stay with that theme. It works.
I got to ask now. Is Josh like some Amazon queen ruler aficionado and connoisseur?
We're both aficionados of mythology and things like that. So, it just made sense getting into Amazon, that we would do something like that.
I like it. I like names of businesses that have secondary and deeper meanings. And now, I've got something. If I'm really bored, I'm going to go out and procrastinate by researching Amazon queens.
There are a lot of them, and their names can be very difficult to spell, which ends up being kind of a mess when we're trying to deal with legal documentation and stuff. But it's fun.
Oh, that's really cool. All right. So I've had a few companies, I would say, in a similar vein to what Thrash.io does. And that is this idea of consolidating multiple Amazon businesses under one roof. That said, everybody's got a little bit of a different twist on it. So I would love to get your twist on this Amazon consolidation that you guys are doing in trying to acquire companies, and anything that you're able to share as well. Like, how many acquisitions have you done, and how long have you guys been in business so far doing this would be really interesting. And if there's something that you're like, Mark, I'm not going to tell everybody this, then don't worry. We'll just say it, and only the three people that listen to the podcast will know.
All right, so I hope you're I've been listening to this for a while, man. So I hope you're keeping track of these questions because I'm not taking notes. You just asked me about four questions right there. So let me try to take them in any order that I kind of remember them in. In terms of our, you know, do we have a particular twist on the market? No, I don't think we do necessarily. I mean, you know, I heard Richard when you had him on here with 101 Commerce, you know, I mean, that's talking about, you know, the idea is fairly simple. I think people get it. You know, although in terms of, I think what you may see in this market a decent bit when you mention other people, like there's like, you know, someone has built a great home goods business and now they want to expand into looking for other home goods products to roll into that, right? We are really kind of vertical agnostic. So we're not really looking at it from that point of view. We really just believe in the ecosystem overall. We believe in the fundamental transformation that Amazon has wrought on our the way we do commerce and particularly e-commerce. And we just see an overall opportunity. So we're looking for just great business. I mean, look, we want great products. And, you know, so people who have, you know, top ranking, you know, great ratings, you know, and a good number of reviews, all that stuff. That's really what we're looking for. But, you know, as far as what it is, you know, it could be all over the board, really. I mean, again, the most important thing is that they've built a quality product, right? And it really comes down to, you know, it comes down to the ASIN, right? The Amazon listing itself, the product, the SKU, whatever you want to call that. So that's really what we're most focused on. So we look at our business as a portfolio of those, right? So, and any business may have a handful of them, you know, and I know a lot of people in this marketplace, you know, some of the acquirers in this place, market space are tend to be still, I mean, you probably see a lot, you know, people looking for a single business, right? So, you know, the executive leaving some big company, getting an SBA loan, whatever, we can talk through all that stuff later. But, you know, for that person, they're concerned with SKU concentration, right? And, you know, lots of, right, rightfully so, this is going to be their one business and they're taking out a big loan for it. It's actually kind of the opposite for us. So as far as our interest, we are interested in the more concentrated your SKUs are, the better, right? Because, you know, it's less for us to take on and manage the whole thing, right? And we're not concerned about the individual performance of that one because we've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of others, right? But I mean, we are concerned about it in terms of how it does, but it's not going to sink us or make us by the performance of any one SKU we acquired any one time. So that's kind of how we, if that kind of answers how we look at the business. I mean, and again, we want, you know, we're not looking for fad products either, just something clear to say. So if you got fidget spinners, you know, we're not interested in that. Those are hot for, you know, a year. My son has a dozen of them sitting all over his room and he's never going to spin them again. So we don't want things like that. And so we want stuff that is really stable in terms of its demand.
Yeah, I'm just going to put a note to everybody that's given out fidget spinners for swag. Thank you for making my kids' rooms just filled with stuff that's laying around because you're absolutely right. And, you know, I will disagree with you on something here. You said that you guys really, you're not sure if you really have a unique spin, but this idea that you guys have of looking at Amazon businesses, not so much in terms of the business side of it, but you're looking more at the ASIN. And trying to evaluate individual ASINs and the strengths of those relative to everything else. That's really what you're looking at. That is a unique way of approaching the marketplace. And it allows you to look at something that has SKU concentration or a unicorn product. And we do see it from a lot of buyers with a business that has a unicorn product, kind of thinking, I don't know if I want to, you know, bet $2 million on this unicorn product here. And you guys are saying, well, no, we've got a lot of products like that. So that's a twist.
Oh, that's good. Good to know. I mean, all right. So we do have a slight twist on it.
So how many deals, if you're able to share, even broadly, how many deals do you think you guys have done so far?
I'm going to be a little coy here about some of these things, but we've done, you know, dozens of deals. So, you know, not high, but, you know, we're moving quickly. So, and that number is increasing all the time. Yeah. So, you know, it's been exciting for us. I mean, going back to the, you know, the SKU concentration question, it's interesting. I wanted to add something to that as you're talking about it, like, because there's a lot of interesting, you know, Amazon sellers, sometimes you get these weird businesses, right? Where they've used, you know, these products out there, Viral Launch or Jungle Scout or whatever. And they found, you know, four different holes in the market. So they're selling, you know, pot holders and humidifiers and some sort of, you know, potted plant for the product, you know, very different weird products. I got four of them. And, you know, to somebody, you know, somebody external coming in and looking at that would go, well, geez, that they're all over the place. They're not, you know, just sporting goods. And now that's crazy. But, you know, we get it. We get that's how Amazon works. And, you know, what matters is the listing and its position relative to its competitors in the keyword space, right? And that's what we look at, that's what we care about. So, you know, it's interesting, like in that sense, also that business is attractive to us if it's, you know, again, concentrated, even if it's in strange different products. We don't have to have like this suite of products around, like I said, one vertical, or you're building a brand into it. Like, I, you know, again, that's a, an interesting point to discuss, is the position of brand in the Amazon marketplace. Because let's face it, we're all talking about FBA businesses here, right? And frankly, most people who buy these things, and I, you know, I see our products in the wild all the time, and I love it. You know, you go to a friend's house and they've got one of your products sitting there. You're like, oh, it's great, but where'd you get it? Well, so do they say the little brand that we happen to buy? No, they say Amazon, right? They got it on Amazon. They got it from Amazon. If they had a problem, they returned it to Amazon. We're at a place right now, we're still, we're all sitting on the coattails of Amazon, right? The brand halo that Amazon provides. So, you know, we recognize that, and we're going to be very clear about that and how we look at the products and the ecosystem.
So do you guys place much weight at all on a business building a brand, or even building customers outside of Amazon, such as email lists, and being able to drive that to products and new products? Or is that kind of a secondary metric that you look at?
It's a secondary metric. I mean, I wouldn't say we don't look at it. We certainly do, and there is some value there, but it is dwarfed by the value presented by the Amazon ecosystem, right? And so, you know, we care first and foremost about how you are positioned on Amazon. But, you know, look, of course, it's nice to have some of the, you know, the emails and you know, people that love your product that, you know, if you do, you know, because what happens now is oftentimes we'll, you know, we will have, we'll acquire a product that is in the same space where we have five more. And so that becomes, we start to now as a business uniquely perhaps accrue some value from things like that, right? So, because if you have that email list of, you know, 40,000 chefs or something, people who love cooking, and I have four of the cooking products, now I can cross promote our stuff right through there. So it does start to have some value the longer we go at this, right? And I think that value will increase the more we do this. But, you know, right now we're still pulling stuff in all sorts of different spaces. They don't always overlap. And it's something we look at, but it's certainly a secondary metric.
You know, when I look at companies like yours, not just specifically within the Amazon space, and I want to talk about that in a little bit here, but when I look at companies like yours that are consolidating businesses and building some of a portfolio, the approach is typically to find efficiencies in combining things together, right? So if you're looking at a content network of websites, so completely divorced from the Amazon world, what you have usually is a stable of writers, editors, and an editorial process that can churn out new content and be able to build up a network that way. So bringing on a new content site isn't as labor intensive. You have this natural efficiency. E-commerce stores in the past, what I've seen have been logistic efficiencies, right? You're able to have, you know, maybe the same warehouse staff fulfill more products. When you guys are doing what you're doing, and again, I think it lends itself maybe to this ASIN approach. I think from my evaluation, I'd love to get your comments on this. It seems like you're doing this for two reasons. One, I would imagine efficiencies, which I'd love to know where those are, but also a portfolio sort of approach to things, and that you're spreading it out over lots of different ASINs, niche, vertically agnostic, as you say, but it's more of, let's not bet on one winner, let's bet on a lot of winners, potentially. But I'd love to get into, first of all, have you confirm that, and then get into, you know, are you doing this also for efficiencies within your company, that you can run these businesses maybe more efficiently? And if so, you know, where are those?
So that's a great point, and something worthwhile to think about. You know, it's, so I've done, you know, traditional roll-ups before. We sold a company in the late 90s to a company called US Web. A lot of people may, you probably remember, you know, a national brand of web web shops doing, you know, producing websites and stuff. You know, the traditional kind of roll-up looks more for the, like, those efficiencies are more important there, because it's all about pulling cost out, right? If you go acquire 130-person companies, and each one of those 30-person companies has a 5-person finance team or 3-person finance team, whatever, and 3 salespeople. Like, sure, you don't need all of those, right? You need 3 finance people for all 100 of them, right? So, or maybe 6, right? But it's certainly not a linear scale. So that kind of efficiency is certainly more important in a traditional roll-up. And like you said, rolling up content websites, that would be important there also, because you have editors and writers and you know, HTML people and designers that can then be, their work can be leveraged across more stuff. Certainly if you templatize it. It's less of a big deal in this Amazon ecosystem. And what's amazing about what Amazon has done here and creating all these millions of solopreneurs, right, is they've taken it, not just Amazon also, it's all the supply chain companies, it's the manufacturers. They've simplified this interaction so much that you can get a single person running a $5 million business, which is, you know, that's unheard of in history. It's incredible. right? So they've taken out a lot of the complexity. Now, most of the time you get to that scale, they've got a couple of assistants, part-time assistants, VAs, or something like that. So could we drive efficiencies there? Yeah, we certainly can. But it's more about being able to improve the performance than it is just simple efficiency. So for instance, a lot of these, we meet a lot of great sellers who are, I just love it, like classic entrepreneurs, like dropped out of college or just got out of college and started selling on Amazon, and they're traveling the world and living the life, and they built great products and they just hustled. And they're smart, that's great. But you know what, when it comes to global sourcing and your supply chain coming from all over the world and getting into different places at Amazon, you're not going to be as good at it as the team that I have here, right? I've got a leader here who ran a $2 billion supply chain and 140 countries for one of the largest shipping companies in the world, right? And we have a whole team of people under this, on this side doing this work. And so we can do it better, more efficiently. We can negotiate better. We can, we can do both on the shipping side and the manufacturing side with volume discounts. So we can do that better, and we can therefore carve out more profit from these products. I look at it from creative. We're doing stuff across hundreds of products in all sorts of different areas. We know things that are working that are very likely to work, what the impact is and what isn't. And we have, I can afford to have photographers on staff if I want to, right? Because rather than having to try a different outsourcer and all this stuff all the time. I'd say advertising and marketing. It's another key place where it's not necessarily about, the efficiency of having, less people doing it, for more things. It's really about the knowledge, right? I've come from a performance marketing background. I sold two companies, that were a Google performance marketing company and a Facebook performance marketing company. They were top of the line what we did. I've got a team here that is second to none in driving, in understanding performance marketing and driving traffic from all these various sources. And Amazon is it's another PPC marketplace. So should we be able to do better than the individual seller who did a good job with their business? Yeah, we should. So I see it as efficiency in deploying new resources for new revenue, right? And resources to improve the performance of these products where they are. It's not like a cost efficiency, right?
Sure. No, that makes complete sense. I want to ask, one of the problems I've seen companies run into when they're consolidating either businesses or in your case, ASINs, but I would still consider them businesses to some extent, would be the concept of Peter robbing Paul, right? You buy a dog and it starts draining the resources of other companies. So what have you guys done to protect yourself against that? When you do multiple acquisitions, you're going to buy a bad one at some point. It's just going to happen. So what have you guys done to help protect yourself against draining the resources of the company? When do you pull the plug?
It's not even necessarily that you buy a bad one in this ecosystem. It's that you buy one that has bad competitors that screw with it, right? I mean, Amazon sellers know what I'm talking about very well, right? I mean, the wrong complaint that even if it's fake, even if it's not correct, put into Amazon can shut you down or slow you down or cause problems. So yeah, well, look, I mean, we have to know the difference between, a problem like that we're going to fix versus something like you said, just a bad egg that we're going to pull the plug. I think we've done this a lot. My partner, Josh, and I have both, been a part of a number of startups, started companies ourselves. He's one of the most creative and experienced financial deal makers I've ever seen, has done more debt deals and equity deals than anybody. I think we look at this dispassionately I think that's the key, right? You think about capital allocation, which is really what we're doing, and it's, you can go listen to, podcasts about that all day. There's some great ones. You got to know when to cut your losses and do it fast. And that's the key. And we don't get emotional about it. I mean, that's hard. Like the seller who builds their family of 20 products, and each one is kind of, this business is their baby. And each one of those is another baby of theirs. And, they may be getting killed on, decanters or something, or letter openers, but they love it and they think they can get back there and they're going to hold on to it longer than they should. We don't have that. We have no baggage on it. If the letter openers are sucking, we'll cut them, right? So quite often if we buy a business that has a lot of SKU without the SKU concentration we like, we'll look at it and we'll cut the losers day one. I mean, we're not even going to pay for that. I mean, if you're not making money on it, in some cases we will actually, sometimes there's underperforming ones and the seller may want to keep them and keep working on them. We have actually, we'll buy individual SKUs or sets of SKUs from somebody, right? So ASINs, I think everybody in your audience knows what an ASIN is, but more people know what a SKU, what SKUs are. So I think it's just a question of, you just have to be dispassionate about it and have a financial mindset towards it. And, look, sometimes they're worth saving. Sometimes you can get back there, but sometimes you can't, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you may not have emotions related to some of these products, but you do have investors within your company, right? So, I mean, how much does that play into it as far as not wanting to pick that losing SKU or a SKU with bad competitors, as you put it?
It doesn't. I mean, look, we have great investors, but they're not that involved in the business or they're looking at individual deals we're doing. We cross-culled early on a decision we made that was really, I think, really important. And, you know, that was the only way we were going to do it, was we cross-collateralized the investors across everything we did. So there are some people who have looked at this market by saying, hey, I'm going to do an SPV, you know, and acquire this, you know.
What is SPV?
Special purpose vehicle, right? So you can raise money in a single, it's almost like separate companies, and then they're all related. At some point in the future, you say you're going to roll them together and rationalize them based on, you know, revenue and EBITDA, whatever it is, right? But then you end up with different sets of investors. And that's a really bad idea, right? Because then you have your intent and what you want to do are kind of can be across purposes, right? You know, I have this group of investors over here and their product is going down and I shouldn't focus on it anymore. But this group over here, the product's doing great. If I put more effort there, I'm going to make a lot more money. The right thing for me and for the business is to focus where I need to and improve it. But if you've done your financing that way, then you're kind of shackled. Right, and that's what we did not do. We were not going to do that. It just doesn't make any sense, right? So it was important to talk about cross-collateralizing across everything and say, look, everyone we buy goes into this and you all are part of this, right? So that allows us to have that broader focus.
Why Amazon? I mean, there's a lot of different roll-up plays within the online space, and you've got a really remarkable resume with tech companies. You know, you could have gone for ad networks, you could have gone for content sites, you could have done any of number of things in the video.
Kind of the advertising space.
All right, so maybe not that bad example, but why choose Amazon?
So, you know, it's funny. This started actually as an e-commerce roll-up. So you go back to it, you know, this is maybe, I mean, why Amazon is probably one of the reasons you said why we were kind of coy about talking about what we're doing for a while, and now we are talking about it. We discovered this, and it looked super easy. It's not as easy as we thought, but it never is. But so we originally were going to do e-commerce. Like my Facebook advertising company, Orion CKB, we were all performance marketing, part of Elite, which is now Tinuity. They've, you know, changed names again, but a fantastic group, and we were very, very good at performance marketing on Facebook. And so all of our customers were either e-commerce or lead gen, but people who made money from what we did, right? And so we started looking at that and saying, hey, there's, you know, the e-commerce companies are getting smaller and smaller, and, you know, they're able to produce more value, and this whole supply chain kind of thing is figured out. Maybe there's an opportunity to go out and roll up the small ones and take what we know how to do, which is all the performance marketing, which ultimately was adding value to these businesses, more so than the other piece of it. And we could create, you know, additional value by putting them together. So we were doing it looking at e-commerce. And, you know, when you do that, you start to look at Amazon as a channel, obviously. So we thought Amazon would be a channel for our e-commerce play. And just started looking into it, right? And started meeting people in the ecosystem. And at the same time, my e-commerce customers at my Facebook advertising agency were asking us, like, you know, you guys are good at Facebook. Could you run our Amazon ads for us? Because we're not doing well there. So we started really looking into that. Once we looked into the Amazon ecosystem, it was really, it was amazing. I mean, to me, to see like the leverage that you got, you know, again, we all pay for it, certainly to Amazon, but like it's they bring you traffic, right? That's a sure thing. You're paying for it, but anyone who's looking for a product, if you've got a good one in a rank, you'll get it. Whereas you can have a great product and you don't have the right team driving traffic to you on Facebook and Google, and no one's going to know about it. You're not going to get it. You're not going to get it in their hands. So we just started to see that the Amazon ecosystem was really, really much more powerful. And we think the deals were better. And the opportunity to move here was quicker and to find these companies. And then, you know, it's just, I think we've, like, I'll rather be lucky than good any day, Mark. But I think we just hit the right time to sort of start looking at this. And there were more and more businesses. We really just kind of went out to sites like yours, you know, and looked around to see what was on the internet available. And we started to see these Amazon businesses and we said, hey, let's give it a try. Let's grab a couple of these. And, you know, then we really all start to gel from there.
Yeah. You know, so many Amazon sellers look at Amazon, obviously with big eyes of opportunity, but also wary eyes of distrust for what Amazon is going to do. You know, and frankly, for some people that have been selling on Amazon, let's talk about Amazon Vendor Central. You know, maybe that's been justified. You know, Amazon, as of the time of recording this podcast, what was about a month ago, they sent out basically non-renewal notices to so many vendors that saying, we're not going to be buying any more product from you. And poof, those businesses are basically gone. Not entirely, but very, very damaged. How do you get over the suspicion of Amazon bad or evil? I don't trust them, but I'll make money from them.
We get asked this a lot, and I've dealt with these behemoths. That's all I've done for the last like 10 plus years, 12 years, right? So Google, right? I have an SEO company. I've been doing SEO for a long time there. We did Google PPC, right? The company that we grew here before and sold to the post companies, like Facebook and Facebook Advertising Agency. I've dealt with these, you know, the FANGs, whatever, these giant companies that seem kind of heartless in the move without caring. And, you know, you can try to read the tea leaves on what they're doing. But I think the most important thing, I've had longevity in all those places. And by doing a couple simple things, like by following the rules, being a good actor in the ecosystem, and understanding what they're looking for. And frankly, this Vendor Central change, like, you know, it's tough for a lot of those guys. But you can go back to 2002 and start reading Jeff Bezos's shareholder letters. And he's telegraphing, I mean, just literally writing down in words, this is what we're going to do. This is where we are. People asked him if he was a competitor, Barnes & Noble, back in 1999, 2000. He said, no. He's always had the vision for building a platform and a marketplace. He said, they sell books. We're a marketplace, right? And they needed to be the first party seller to be, you know, the whole Vendor Central platform to get it to the scale and size that they wanted. But he's been writing about the marketplace since then. And, you know, and there's some great quotes about, you know, he talks about the businesses they get married to that are great. They try a lot of stuff. And third-party seller marketplace is one of those. It's that, you know, AWS and Prime. Those are their three pillars of their business. So, you know, I think if you think about that, like, they're not going to destroy one of the pillars of their business. And then if you get into their numbers, you know, an outsized portion of their profits is driven by, actually all of their profits are driven by these three businesses. And we all know that AWS provides an enormous amount of profit to them. And you know, the marketplace, while they don't break it out independently, you can kind of read between the lines there and see it's producing profit a lot. And that's where these decisions are driven from, right? You know, and again, profit's not always his goal. You know, that's why he's moved so much, you know, inventory and product over the years. But again, I think it's been telegraphed there. So I really think that Amazon's positioning in this space is to be the marketplace, to do what they've done. You know, they say they have 500 million, you know, things for items for sale on Amazon. Like, they didn't get there by having a sourcing team like Walmart does, you know, going out and sourcing individual products. You'd have to have a 20 million person sourcing team. They have a 6 million person, there's 6 million accounts on Seller Central, right? We all know that a lot of people have double ones, whatever. The Chinese companies do different things, but you know, there's probably a couple million sellers on there for real making any kind of money, right? And they're doing all of that for them. So I just think if you look at the business, it's core to what Amazon is all about and where they're going. And from that standpoint, be a good actor in the ecosystem and you'll be in good shape.
Yeah, to quote the actual number here, and I don't do show prep, but I actually prepped a little bit for this here and looked up some Amazon statistics. $22.9 billion in third-party services. And then in 2018, 1 million new sellers joined their reseller services, about 3,000 people per day. Now, again, probably some duplicate accounts in there, probably some third or fourth accounts in there.
Fifth, sixth accounts, yeah. But still, there's a lot of real, I mean, they've released the numbers. There's 200,000 sellers that make six figures and up, right? 100,000 a year and up, US dollars. I mean, there's 2 million who've made any money, I think, is the state. So, you know, 50,000 might be a lot of money to somebody, right? And this is in a year, right? So I think there were 50,000 sellers that do 500,000 a year and up, something like that. So, you know, there's some real, you know, that's a city, man.
Yeah, you know? No, absolutely. In fact, one of these statistics was if Amazon was a country, they would be the 140th largest country in the world, something like that in terms of gross domestic product. Absolutely amazing statistics. And I tend to agree with you. In the past, I've been pretty publicly bearish on Amazon because I felt like it was a gold rush. However, seeing where they're going, and you were ahead of the curve on this, reading what Bezos was saying, you know, that they wanted to be a marketplace and they want to be that de facto ecosystem of the internet where people buy stuff, right? They want, you know, when you think, I'm going to buy something online, they don't want you to think about any other solution other than I'm going to buy it through Alexa or through the internet or through my app or whatever, because that just works and that's where all the products are. So I agree. I think they're going all in on that. I don't think it's much of a mystery. And so because of that, I think third-party sellers are actually really well-positioned, especially right now, because it's still relatively mature. But I have to ask you about competitors. Shopify recently announced They are going to spend over $1 billion on the Shopify Fulfillment Network, which is going to be able to power all of their sellers with customized packaging and full-on fulfillment services. Obviously, you have Target and Walmart offering free two-day shipping without having the Amazon Prime subscription. You said you don't want to read the tea leaves, but I'm going to ask you to read the tea leaves. Let's talk a little bit about the future here with some of these competitors. Do they even stand a chance? And are we going to see a consolidation of the marketplace? Or do companies like Thrasio, I'm going to get this right, need to have more of a multi-channel approach?
I think that Shopify announcement was awesome. I love that. I think it's a brilliant idea, you know, and I hope it works. I mean, we would love to have more channels. And we do. Look, we sell in other channels. I mean, it's small amounts. It's really for us, look, it's a question of focus. I've started a lot of companies and, you know, you hear all the platitudes and stuff about it. You got to focus, you know, strategy is saying no. Until you've lived through that a bunch of times, you don't really get it, right? It's like, you know, all of us have to, you know, feel that the oven is hot to understand it. We can't have someone tell us. But like, it really is about having that. The focus is about saying, hey, look, this is what we do. We do really well right now. Let's perfect this and then let's worry about other things, right? If that thing is big enough and takes enough of your time, that's worth doing. So there's enough complexity in the Amazon ecosystem alone. You know, some of it, look, I expected it to be more than I thought. I expected it to be, you know, crazier and surprising, but there's stuff in there that's even surprised me, like the competition question, all this stuff on there. But we fully intend to, you know, look at other channels, and will. I mean, we are already exploring, as I said, we have some small alternate channel sales already. We're looking at retail. I mean, let's face it, like as large as Amazon gets, but I think retail is over $10 trillion, you know, globally or something like that, and 90% of it is still transacted offline. I mean, you know, people are still buying a lot of stuff in stores. So you'd be crazy not to be looking at that as a channel. It's really a question of time for us, of when, right? So, you know, where we've been at this less than a year, really, around a year. So that's a lot to do in a year. We're, you know, both acquiring all these products, but then having to operate them, then having to worry about improving them. At the same time, we're building the company. We're building the teams and the systems that will allow us to do this and the processes and procedures. So, you know, it's really just a question of looking at it that way. And that's kind of just traditional kind of startup thinking and how you go about this stuff. But I do think, look, whether they succeed enormously or not, you know, Shopify, they've got a good chance of succeeding with this. It's always just a question of what portion of revenue it accounts for. I mean, we looked at a lot of these businesses that say they're going to start to sell on Walmart and stuff. We've seen people that are selling on Walmart have been doing it for a while, and it's 5% of their sales on Amazon, 10% of their sales on Amazon. Like, Amazon is so dominant. You talked about sort of, you know, pruning. What do we do with a bad product? Well, to an extent, like, if I can focus on that 90% of revenue that's on Amazon and do better with it, I'm going to make more than by trying to hack out a little bit more on Walmart, which is a more difficult to work with ecosystem right now. So I think those guys are going to have to up their game. I mean, from everything I hear, they're not as easy to work with. They're not, and, you know, let's forget of the other channels beyond that. Shopify, I imagine, will do a good job of that. I mean, they understand user interface. They understand simplicity as well or better than anybody. So I'm excited to see what they do. But, you know, let's face it, like, what is it? I've been throwing around the statistic. Something like 60%, 56% of searches, product searches, start on Amazon now. From all products, right? So more than all of the search engines combined, including Google, right? But I just saw a new figure that among millennials and below, it's like 76% product searches are starting on Amazon. So I mean, it is great. When you're looking for something, you want a toothbrush, you know, you just pull up Amazon now and you go and you get it. It shows up at your door and anywhere from 2 hours, depending where you are, to 2 days, right? Or even three, whatever. But you don't have to think about it anymore. So, you know, I think that dynamic is just going to continue to play itself out. I don't think of Amazon as this company, so to speak, anymore, really. It's a commerce internet, right? And so you're telling me you have, you know, channel risk. It's like telling me I have channel risk because I'm on the internet. You know, people told me that, and you probably too, like 15 years ago. Was it a problem that you're only selling your software on the internet? It's like, okay, next. The next person, right? And so, you know, from that perspective, I hope these other things are successful. I hope Shopify makes a go of it. We will certainly be in all these channels, you know, over time. But right now, Amazon is, you know, it's a great place to focus your effort and to drive value.
Yeah, to your point about 90% of all retail sales are still happening offline, right? And validated again by the statistical research I was doing before this, that Amazon accounts for 5%, 5% of all retail sales. So what does that mean? That means there's a 5% of this highly fragmented online sales happening. And that's being fragmented by Walmart, Target, and other big box stores that have gone online. But then also the millions of onesie twosie sort of sellers online that are, you know, pulling in $100,000 to $500,000 in revenue per year. And there's a lot of those little businesses out there doing just that. So I think your point is right. You know, right now in the marketplace where we're at, Amazon is dominant. Amazon is the new Google, as it were, for just e-commerce transactions online. So then that leads us to the question of how do you compete on Amazon? What are the most, and this is going to round out our conversation here because we're almost coming to time here, but how do you compete in the long term? The one criticism I hear about Amazon is, look, it's a marketplace. So products tend to be somewhat ubiquitous and you kind of get into a race to the bottom because the only way to differentiate yourself in many ways is on price. You know, you don't have better customer service because that's been equalized by Amazon. So you can differentiate on product or on price. And where do you see the best way to set up a defensible long-term position?
So first, I would say that I slightly disagree in that, like, customer service is handled by the companies themselves, like how quickly you respond to queries, what you do when someone has a problem. Granted, Amazon is kind of frontline there, but there's a lot you can do in that space. Yeah, I mean, look, overall, I don't, like, people don't always buy the cheapest product. I know I don't, right? maybe it's dumb, but I'm the guy who goes to the page when I'm looking for a two-man tent to, you know, go camping. I don't just buy the cheapest one on the page. Some people do, but I go look for someone, something like that. I go research, I'm going to look for quality, right? I mean, it really comes back to what I was saying earlier, like about playing with these giants in these ecosystems, you know, is being a good actor in the ecosystem. You know, people used to ask me about Google SEO, like, how do you guys do this? Right? I've been running SEO properties for, I don't know, I mean, you know, 10 plus years now, through every Google chain with, you know, all the penguin, panda, whatever animal name you want to bring up, like, they change multiple times a month. And people say, what's your secret? Now, how do you keep doing it? And my secret was, I said, there's pages on Google, go to the site where they explain to you what to do for SEO. And that's what we do. We follow their rules, but there's a lot of rules, and we follow them all, and we do a good job of it. You know, Amazon says, here's how to play. Here's what to do. You know, have a great product. You know, make sure you're treating customers well. You're responding well. If your ratings are going down, is it a problem with your product? Then how do you deal with that, right? So, it may sound, you know, silly to hear. People might not want to hear it, but, like, you know, that's the reality is, make a great product, service the customers where you can do customer service, do a good job of it, and, you know, and you be a good actor in this ecosystem. Now, that being said, there is an element of Amazon that is, you know, cheapness and is race to the bottom, and you got to think about how you differentiate yourself. I mean, look, if your supply chain is more efficient and you're better off, then going to the bottom, you'll win. You'll win that battle and you'll sell a lot, right? But you can start, I think you're going to start to see some branding differentiation, right, over time. And right now, as I said earlier, we kind of discount that because everyone feels like they're buying from Amazon, right? And this is just the evolution of these marketplaces, I think, a little bit. You know, look, if you're in a category where, you know, tennis shoes or something, someone's going to buy a Nike, right? Or Adidas or whatever they like, right? You know, you got to think about some categories that will matter, some it won't, right? I mean, so, you know, if you're buying a letter opener, you don't really care if it's a, you know, Nike letter opener, not really, right? So you have to be able to play by the other things I'm saying. You know, just be a good actor, have a great product, and, you know, and make sure your supply chain's tight. You know, I think for individual, you know, sellers looking at this marketplace, certainly new ones, I mean, it's tough to get into now. I mean, that certainly is an issue, right? Because it's really just blown up in the last 5 years, 4 or 5 years, right? So, and so, you know, there's people in almost every space crowding it out. But I think you see price differentiation already. You know, we've actually seen products, deals, and you may have looked at some of these same ones that were kind of funny, like, well, they raised the price, you know, every week for like 6 months and kept selling more. You know, like there's counterintuitive examples of all this stuff. And you know, there's reasons people do things when they're buying and shopping, and you don't necessarily know all of them, but it's not necessarily just, you know, one thing they're looking at, like price.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I obviously look at a lot of Amazon businesses, and more I'm seeing the ones that are consistently growing over years are the ones that never actually competed on price to begin with. They've looked at a product and maybe even in a crowded category and said, how can we innovate on this and create something just different enough that nobody else is really going to want to compete against us, but we're going to create something that's super useful. And then magically, of course, it's not really magic. Like you said, it's being a good actor and doing what Amazon wants. It created a good product that people like. It works for the long term and it's more sustainable. So I'm happy to hear you say that because of the broad experience with different ASINs that you guys at your group have. Just kind of validates that. You know, last question I'm going to ask you, it revolves around this idea of product creation. I'm going to ask you for more of a general rule. Maybe it's not the right way to go because I do think that there's multiple ways to compete on Amazon. But I want to see if we can get to a generic sort of, here's maybe the best practice and how to be a good actor in the community. Where would you recommend sellers put most of their effort or break up their effort? And I will put it into product creation and innovation and quality versus the Amazon specific metrics of making sure that you have high ratings and maybe even going out and gaming those if you have to or being aggressive as ways to get those versus the PPC side of I'm going to try and get as much sales velocity as possible, whether that be on Amazon or sending off Amazon traffic as well to Amazon to get that most sales velocity. So kind of three groups here, right? You have the sales metrics that kind of influence things, the customer service and ratings, and then the product quality. Where do you think people need to really be divvying up their time? And again, you might come back and say, Mark, you're thinking about this completely wrong. That's cool if that's what you think.
No, but I would just say you just kind of summed up, you know, how do I be a good Amazon business? I mean, it's all of these things, I hate to say. Like, I don't think there's any one magic bullet, you know, it's, you know, PPC works for some products and it works great. It doesn't work for all of them. I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, the thing I love about Amazon to begin with is that, you know, there's certain products you can sell stuff on there. You could never sell directly in another channel unless you somehow had, you know, magic, like, you know, viral takeoff or something. But like when we were on Facebook, for instance, right, Facebook advertising, you know, it's going to cost you $30 on average, you know, give or take something to acquire a customer at least, right, for a consumer kind of drive-by product, which means, you know, you got to be selling the thing for $70-$75 at least to make any money back after your COGS and all this kind of stuff and your advertising costs. And it's expensive. So you can't sell a $10 item, right? Can you sell $10 items on Amazon? All day, right? Because they're bringing you the people. They're taking so much stuff out of the equation. So, you know, But then you just have to play in the Amazon ecosystem well, right? But that product may not make sense to advertise, right? To be paying, you know, to acquire customers on that one. You know, it's tricky. I mean, I think for individual sellers, product launch and, you know, new products is important. Right? Now, that's not something we focus on or particularly care about again, because now you're talking about, you know, having more ASINs and we're interested in having less. Lots of sellers, though, that we talk to, it's actually they have, you know, now they've learned all this and they know how to launch something and, you know, they know how to do the quality on this stuff and how to get the initial purchases. They need capital. Again, we don't focus on that, but a lot of sellers want capital to do that. So we'll buy like a top performing ASINs from them and they take that cash and put it back into these things they want to do, right? And test out advertising and put a product, you know, producing new product and stuff like that. You know, look, I think the most important thing is just that, and this is where it's tough nowadays, but it's the quality question. It's the number of reviews and quality reviews. I would not, going back to what I said earlier, I would not suggest, you know, being aggressive with that. Or, I mean, being aggressive with following Amazon's rules, great. And so whatever they say you can do, you know, you can't ask for, you know, four-star reviews or good reviews. I wouldn't break any of that stuff, because my experience going back to 10 years with Google is you get away with it for a while, but they catch you. They ultimately catch you, and they'll burn you for it. I mean, Amazon is culling reviews every month, right? And their system is going through, probably every day, but I mean, they're going through and doing cleanups. And if you're doing something that's a bad actor thing in that space, you're going to get busted for it. So I say you don't do that. But there are things you can do that are legit. Now, look, if you see that, you know, your ratings are going down because you've got some product quality issue, then go fix that, and, you know, send out free versions to all those customers, right? Or whatever it is, right? Like, be a good actor in the system, have a voice, you know, respond to the queries and the questions and the FAQs as quickly as you can and let people know you're on top of it. And, you know, and if that takes, you know, an external site that's informational where you talk to people about what you are, who you are, and what your product is, and do that too. I think that's, you know, an important place to focus, but it's hard for people to get a toehold here, you know, now, if you're not, you know, already in the ecosystem and with a product.
This has been fantastic. Carlos, thank you so much for coming on. Do you have any last thing that you would want to share with the audience here? Maybe a question that I didn't ask that you think would be useful just in general about Amazon or what you guys are doing over at Thrasio?
Not really. You know, I mean, it's an exciting time to be in the space. It's a good time for people to be selling their businesses, and we're happy to do that and help buy them. I mean, I think, you know, you guys are an excellent brokerage. I've really enjoyed working with you guys, and you know, I'd put a little plug there for you. It, getting someone on your side that understands what they're doing and how to represent your business, and how to talk about it and help you and understand what you should get and what you shouldn't, that's very important. And, you know, and there's not, you know, not all brokers are created equal. Not all business, you know, people who help you sell your business are equal. And you guys have all done it. And I've really appreciated that working with you guys.
Yeah, no, we've always appreciated working with your group as well. You guys have been fantastic to work with. I really appreciate you coming on here and sharing as much as you have. I mean, I know, you know, what you guys are doing is pretty innovative. Not a lot of people are doing it. There are some doing it, but it's great to get the insights from a company that is working with so many diverse different ASINs, because it just brings a different perspective to everything. I've greatly enjoyed this conversation. So thank you so much. I know that the Amazon queens of the past are smiling down on your company and will continue to do so. So thank you for sharing that with me as well. Yep. And
there you go.
Wonder Woman, there we go. Do you sell that on Amazon? Just curious.
No, don't sell those. No, those are like, you know, licensed products, Disney probably, but you know, I bought them on Amazon. It's great.
Of course you bought it on Amazon. All right, awesome. Carlos, thank you so much for joining me.
Cool. It was great talking to you, Art.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.